Welcome to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast from Cold Omaha. I'm Tom Schreier. He's Max Hamilton. We've got a great show for you today. We start with the disappointing news that our second ever podcast got deleted, most likely because I left it on the desktop of a computer that I don't own. People probably were wondering what a video game podcast was doing on it.
Yeah, I'm going to teach Tom how to use file save as well in the future.
So yeah, I'm going to save this podcast. It's going to be vaulted. We're not going to lose this one. But in it, it was one of my favorite ones that we did. We just kind of discussed our favorite last-gen games. And I felt like it was a topic worth revisiting, right? I thought this was a pretty good generation, the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of the longest-lived generations, and they're still churning out a few games as we transition into the next gen, or current gen, I guess.
I mean, for me personally, I know the generation's kind of over just because my Xbox 360 is just kind of petering out. It occasionally just signs me out in the middle of games. Sometimes the internet just will stop working. It's not my internet.
The cables for that don't last forever, and they didn't really put in very durable tech and equipment until kind of the later models came out. Yeah, the slim and the with all the touchpad and the noises and stuff. And that original was a tank. But I had Red Ring of Death twice, and just problem after problem with it.
Yeah, I actually never had the Red Ring of Death. I did. My current one sounds like a four-cylinder engine. It's trying, but it's really loud. I do, like, real brief aside, I think Ryle's bought a slim. And his shuts off every 30 minutes, so at least mine. He also bought it from a guy who's in a lot of debt and wouldn't buy it back. But
I mean, you know, some people are better with life decisions than others.
But anyways, I think just to jump right in, with the first podcast, we recorded the whole thing without me mentioning Mortal Kombat. And you know me, and I think anyone I know or who I went to college with knows, I'm a huge Mortal Kombat guy. As much as I like narrative-driven games, I do kind of like the old-school games, the ones that were resurrected. And this, along with Tomb Raider, they did a good job bringing the series back, introducing it to new people, really made it next-gen in terms of graphics, in terms of kind of all the options they offer. And I don't know, how much are you a Mortal Kombat guy? Do you play it at all?
I'm a social player. I'll never purchase the game just because the fighting genre in general hasn't really pulled me in, other than Smash Bros., but I definitely like playing it in a party setting.
And that's, I think, the design of that game. I think it's really still old school in the sense that fatalities are 10 times more fun when there's people around. It's, you know, by yourself,
it's
cool.
Shock value.
Well, the shock value and just the fact that there's the dramatic moment before it happens and you know you've defeated someone. And I think everyone's kind of standing around being like, okay, what's going to happen? And
right, the complete kind of that dominance of just owning your opponent. And then it was too bad that they kind of got rid of those. And I understand why they were going for a T rating, but with Injustice, Gods Among Us, like, it was a great DC superhero fighting game made by the Mortal Kombat team, and it was just this dream team. And then they got rid of, what kind of made Mortal Kombat so famous.
Yeah, and Injustice was a great game. And one thing I like is that with Mortal Kombat X, and I think we'll get to a couple games we're looking for later in the podcast, but with Mortal Kombat X, they're bringing kind of the environment back into it. The one problem is I like that they went back to 2D plane, but they kind of, in the old games, you used to smash someone through a wall, and then you were in a whole new setting.
Right,
And I think they're bringing that back. So,
That's cool. And they did that in Injustice, too. Yeah. There would be three environments per map.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was a great game. I don't know if that's among your top 10, but I would definitely say that they did that very well, but I'm with you. There's something about the old school characters, and I know you got the DC guys, which is awesome, but the old school characters of Mortal Kombat and just the fatalities are phenomenal. They're always fun in those games. Leading into your number 10.
Yeah. So my number 10 is going to be Saints Row the Third. I thought it was just a really spot on, well done game. The first Saints Row was kind of a GTA clone trying to find its place. The second one, they went more arcadey and threw the humor in there, and the third one really found its identity. And I was laughing out loud the whole time playing it. There's great alternate endings. There was some good DLC, and it just really hit all the high notes for me as a game that really set itself apart from GTA and that kind of.
Yeah, I would say it's not among my top 10, but it's very close. I would say that the humor was great. Again, I'm someone who I found myself laughing a lot at it. It's actually another game that's great with other people in the room just because people are shocked that a video game has that good of humor.
Right, yeah, the writing was spot on, and it's a very, it's a crowd pleaser in the sense that, people would play it as a group or take turns with the arcade games and just the side quests, and it was very, there was some drop-in, drop-out co-op play, was there not, with
I think so.
The horde mode is what they called it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, in my mind, that's a game that, first of all, unfortunately, THQ went down. And so the good thing is that people got it for free, right? It was free for a month for Xbox and I think PlayStation as well.
Yeah, it was one of the gold games. And then I think Deep Silver picked up the franchise.
So I think it's one, because the characters are so unique and very memorable, and people are saying that kind of they're not sure where it's going to go, because it went from 3, which plays like a Grand Theft Auto game, to 4, which plays like Prototype, kind of. Is that fair?
Right, yeah.
And so people don't really know where it's going to go from here. In my mind, I'd keep some of the memorable characters. I'd create some new ones, but the online would be exciting, especially with Grand Theft Auto, and we'll get to that in a second. But as much as I love online play, and I still play it online, the characters look kind of the same, you know? And this, right. It's so unique. That game's so unique.
And it wasn't even jumping from 3 to 4. 4 was originally intended as an expansion pack, and it just turned into its own standalone game. And to me, it could have stuck as an expansion pack. There wasn't a whole lot of new stuff. It really just, you know, no character changes, no graphical changes, and it was a lot less vibrant and colorful, I felt. So.
Yeah, and the weird thing about a game like that is that the cars were such a big part. They all were very unique and
right.
Kind of different.
The superpowers completely eliminated the need for cars after just the first few missions.
Yeah, so if I were them, I would maybe make it where it's kind of like Sunset Overdrive, you know, where you build up things over time and then eventually you get to unleash your superpower. I think the best way that game can go is maybe you build up kind of like that and then all of a sudden you're allowed to use the superpower. Because if you have that as a permanent fixture in the game, you take away the driving and kind of the Grand Theft Auto aspect of it. And that's kind of the best part in my mind.
Right.
My number 9 was Assassin's Creed, just the series as a whole. Unfortunately, Unity's kind of turned me off from it, but I thought Black Flag was really good, which was released for both systems. Assassin's Creed 2, I don't know what it is about series, but you can look at movies, you can look at video games. I think the second one, the sequel, makes or breaks it in terms of where the series is going to go. And they absolutely nailed it with number 2. Number 1 was very intriguing. And for me, it was nice to have a shooter that I really... or non-shooter, sorry, that I really enjoyed, because there's so many great shooters, and what separated out is that it was an assassination game. It was a game that you really scaled up walls and that you had to be stealthy and you're not using guns for the most part. And I just thought it was very unique. It was great settings, very memorable characters. So Assassin's Creed series in that last generation, the 360, the PlayStation 3, you know, generation, that was one of my favorite games, one of my favorite series, hand down.
What kind of drew you into that series? I mean, was there one historical setting that really kind of stood out more than the rest, like the attention to detail? I know that a big complaint about the first game was how slow-paced it was, and you had to sit through cutscene after cutscene, and then the action you did take, it was very limited.
And there was a lot of, like, eavesdropping. There was a lot of...
And the tail missions.
Tail missions,
Ubisoft,
that's what I was
obsessed with across all their games now.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree. I think that one was very unique, and that's what I liked about it. I wanted something that was very different. I think the setting really made a difference, and I think the storyline was very intriguing, that you had a guy who was very, Desmond Miles, very, like, identifiable, right? He's a bartender, he doesn't really know where he's going, and he has this cool history. And I think the problem with the later games is they kind of lost track of kind of the mystique of what's happening outside of the Animus, right? It was kind of a unique, it was fun kind of that you're in two different worlds, one that's obviously very vibrant and lively and where most of the action takes place, and one where you see the consequences of kind of everything that takes place.
Right, yeah, that sci-fi backstory, it was really cool to follow along, and it really was pulling you through the game and driving you to complete, the historical missions as Altair, because then you could find out, you know, what's going on in the present day. And, it was... too bad that that sci-fi story got so convoluted throughout the rest of the series and was, you know, really not answered terribly clearly at the end of 3, and then they got confused with Brotherhood and the Ezio trilogy, and then finally kind of got back to it, and then they just dropped it, and who knows what they're doing. I mean, in Assassin's Creed Liberty, Unity, I mean, they completely dropped the present day story entirely, and there's no gameplay outside of Paris.
And I would say the ending of Assassin's Creed was confusing but intriguing enough. You kind of wanted to figure out what was going on. And the unfortunate thing is you realize, like, I don't think there was a master plan. I think, you know what I mean? I don't know what happened with it. And so, like I said, I mean, I think they did a good job. I think 3 was the one where you start as Haytham, right? And then you end up as his son.
Yeah.
That was a cool twist. And there's certain things they've done well, but as a whole, it just became kind of like, it was almost like they bit off more than they can chew. And that seems to be the story of that kind of trajectory of that series, because it seems like they're trying to pump out too many at once. And it's just gotten confusing. And it went from intriguing to just, okay, I don't know where this is going or what's happening, basically. What's your number 9?
Yeah, number 9. By the makers of Saints Row and set in the same universe, just way in the future, Red Faction Guerrilla.
Yeah.
It was another Xbox Live title that was free for games with gold. And what this was is you go to Mars to be with your brother, and you work in a mining facility. And basically, like, you know, the government on Mars and kind of the military there is very oppressive, and you start a guerrilla movement and revolt. And it was a interesting game in the sense that absolutely everything was destructible. Every weapon did a certain amount of damage a certain way to building structures and vehicles and some of the environment to an extent. And it was a wide open Martian colony, open world game where you could kind of do whatever you want, how you wanted, and try to win back the land. And it was just a very cool sci-fi story, really great graphics at the time, and just the gameplay was tight, and it was a fun third-person shooter.
I've downloaded it, and I played it briefly, but, I mean, what kept you going? Was it just the destructibility, the weapons? Is it a good storyline? I mean, what's kind of makes up
that game?
Yeah,
I mean, the story's kind of your typical sci-fi fodder to an extent, but it kind of drew inspiration from all the great sci-fi movies out there, especially some of the horror ones, which I'm a big fan of. A little bit of Firefly in it sometimes. But the main thing that kept me going through it was all the different environments. Every kind of city or region was very visually different. And just the ability to kind of blow through and absolutely destroy everything was a great technological feat that not a lot of games have attempted.
All right, well, moving on, number 8 for me was Grand Theft Auto, the series. I'm actually surprised this is this low, but again, I talk about kind of among generations, this is one of the best ones, and I think this is a tribute to it, because 4 really broke in kind of the long-form story, the sandbox game. At the time, New York seemed big. I know that, you know, the LA, their model was, what, 4, 5, 6, 7 times bigger, but... Yep. At the time it seemed big. As a person who's lived there, it seemed like New York. They're always kind of witty with their commentary. I think with 5, it became more grown up. With 4, there was times when I was like, yeah, am I playing a game for me? Am I playing a game that's for someone who, you know, bought it as a teenager, basically, who probably shouldn't have it?
Yeah, I mean, 4 certainly had that to an extent where it was still kind of, it's always been childish humor, but 4 was more cartoonish, I guess, and a little less believable. 5 certainly became a bit darker, especially with Trevor and some of his antics.
Yeah, the torture thing is ridiculous.
Or just even when he meets Johnny at the start of the game.
He's a weird dude.
Him. It was pretty bad.
It's more,
but
Nico was decent, but I feel like Trevor and even those 3 characters are more memorable.
Yeah, they certainly stood out more for me. I think Nico was trying to be a good guy and just kept getting wrapped into everything, and the other 3 were basically career criminals. But you mentioned, you know, the game that, you know, like a grade schooler is trying to hide from his parents and play. I really think that came from GTA 3. Like, that was the game that was really bad, that was kind of shocking everyone. It was the first one to be, you know, fully 3D and open world, where the other games were bird's eye views, top down.
So I don't know. I think they had a good open world, and I think online is what sold it for me. I'm playing it on the next generation system, but I mean, I told you this when it came out. Online was where I wanted to play. I think that the survival mode's great, the racing. They've done a lot of things well, which is impressive for a game that at its core was really just a one-player game that was about kind of hijacking cars.
Heists are finally on their way. We'll see if that happens, but a lot to look forward to, and it'll be cool to see what they expand with online.
Yeah, exactly. What's your number 8?
So Mass Effect 3 is my number 8. Really liked it. Thought it was a good balance of 1 and 2. 1 for me, I loved that you could just visit every world and explore fully open, do whatever you want, even if there wasn't much there to see. 2 kind of transitioned to strictly a shooter, a level-based shooter, where you're just moving through story mission after story mission, and there wasn't a whole lot of exploration, although there was still a lot of you know, story content. And I think 3 struck a really good balance, although in the next one coming out, and hopefully we hear a little more of this at E3, but I hope they bring back some of the world exploration aspects of the first one, and also some space combat or flying ability. That'd be some sort of aspect that would be welcome, I think, by a lot of people.
So this is my number 4 game, and I kind of piled it in with Dragon Age because I didn't like Dragon Age 2 as much. I loved Origins, and they're both BioWare games, but focusing on Mass Effect right now, and like I said, I had it at number 4. It was one of my favorite games of last generation. It was a game that you had to kind of talk me into just because I was like, I knew it was long, and I was like, how much time do I want to dedicate to a game like this? But it makes it worth your while. You really, I'd say number 1, the storyline's pretty well done, although I hope with, they're kind of hitting the reset button right with the whole story. I really hope that they have kind of a plot in mind so that you actually do have different endings, kind of like how The Witcher is and other games like
that.
Right,
and all the decisions carry over.
Yeah, and so I really hope that that's an element that they're focusing on. But the storyline, I think, turned out well. I think it was, I mean, I'm with you kind of on the trajectory of where Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 ended up, and I think 3 was the best. I would say my favorite part of that was literally cruising around the spaceship and like talking to the characters, and they just did a great job of, first of all, the interactions, secondly, making them all look unique and act unique, and thirdly, you felt like you knew them by the end of the mission. So if one of them died or if you had to choose between one or the other, it felt like a epic choice.
Right. I mean, at the end of 2, they have the infamous suicide mission, and you can literally lose your entire team or yourself and just end the trilogy there at the end of the second game. But it was permanent, and those characters wouldn't carry over into the third game.
Yeah, so that's the main focus for me. If I'm going to buy the next kind of Mass Effect, I want to make sure that they really dig deep with that. That's in my mind, that's what made or break it. I'm with you, though. I think that the action shouldn't be just straight up a shooter. I think it should have RPG elements. And I think, like I said, I think XCOM did this very well. It's not among my top 10, but they allowed you to feel like you were kind of in control of the other people. And I think if you make it a little more simple, you could probably help with the strategy, you know, elements of that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
My number 7 is Dishonored. This is another game you had to talk me into a little bit. It was free, so it makes it a little bit easier to talk into. But I kind of thought it was going to be, there's so many survival horror games, and I just haven't kind of jumped on that wave like many other people have. I think it's a goth setting, and it comes off as kind of a thriller.
Yeah, or it's like steampunk thrown in there a little bit.
Yeah, and so I don't think it's definitely not a thriller. It's such a well-told story. It's a game I'm playing through right now again for the second time. There's a high chaos and a low chaos ending, and actually kind of a medium chaos ending. Your actions do reflect on the other characters and will influence other characters in the game, let alone your outcome. I feel like it's a whole new experience playing through it without trying to kill anyone, without trying to get detected. But you can play it through straight up as an action game. It kind of plays like a first-person Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
And it's fun to play through as an action game, but it's so much more rewarding. You hear better conversations. You understand the maps better. And again, every setting, it's very episodic, which is kind of old school. It's not a sandbox game or anything, but every episode is very unique. It's very well told. It's got great characters. It's among, and again, this is my number 7 game, but it was among my favorite games I've ever played for sure.
Yeah, it definitely makes my honorable mentions. It kind of was a bit, it had a feel of Oblivion or Skyrim to an extent, as well as Thief. So it was a very good melding of those two games, I think. But for me, it didn't make my top 10.
What's your number 7?
7, Dragon Age, kind of tying right into Mass Effect, another BioWare game.
Yeah.
It was the first one was just amazing. I had played it after I had played Mass Effect, and I was like, oh, cool, like Mass Effect in medieval times. And same kind of story-driven content with choices affecting and carrying through all 3 games. I mean, you kind of touched on this, but the second one was just a little shorter and repetitive despite the better graphics. The first one was really cool because it was just so wide open, and, you know, I think 3 found a really good balance of the two. And it's kind of interesting because that's kind of what happened with Mass Effect. You know, the first one was this all-out attempt to have all this content and freedom, and the second one kind of really reined everything in, and I think part of that was with EA purchasing BioWare.
Yeah.
And, you know, the third one definitely found a better balance of the two.
Yeah, this is actually the exception that makes the rule for me. This is actually a game I didn't like the sequel, and luckily I do love 3. That's actually one of my favorite kind of next-gen games.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still playing that now, and I'm kind of relishing it. Like, I'm almost making it longer than it should be, just, and it's a really long game, but just because I want to kind of tap into that environment as much as possible. But I would say it does what Mass Effect does well. It's very memorable characters. It's a very cool storyline. You do feel like you, even to a bigger extent than Mass Effect, kind of affect what's going on within the environment, and your choices matter. Like I said, the character thing means the most to me. I think that you really feel like you know who's in your crew and have some investment in what ends up happening to them. I would say with 2, I was blown away by the first like 30 minutes to an hour. I was like, this is great graphics. It's cool to see what these... we should say 1 was not good graphics. Like, they were very...
It didn't age well. It was an old game.
Yeah, but I think with 2, you see it, and 3, obviously, see what the characters really should look like. But the problem with 2 is it was very console-y. You felt like it was very designed for action and very designed for kind of a quick playthrough.
Right. I mean, even the combat changed, and they didn't have the pause kind of strategic gameplay and all that. So, but that's back to an extent in the third one, although you can't customize kind of the AI as much as you can in the first.
Yeah, so I don't know. At times, the first one I felt like got a little technical, and I'd find myself in a trap because I got too far without realizing like a weakness in one of my crew members.
Right.
And they became like worthless.
Well, yeah, I remember you had to retread quite a bit of ground at one point because you didn't have it as basically your characters weren't as built out as they should have been in the first one.
Yeah, so it's not something to rush through, and the third one found a good balance. There's a good balance between strategic play, kind of the action, and what you do with your characters. But, I mean, it's very involved. It's not a game that you can kind of whip through, but I think it's definitely worth your time. Moving on to number 6, for me, it was Tomb Raider, as I said earlier. It's a great reboot. I felt like you come away really liking Lara Croft and the character they've created, and... there's a lot of good set pieces within it. It's obviously a linear narrative, but it's a very good narrative. Again, you kind of feel attached to the characters. And I think the action was brilliant. I mean, I just think that they did that very well. They did the environments well. There's very few things that game didn't do well. And it really, I don't know if it was a dying series, but it's a series that I think needed a reboot. And I think they kind of nailed it with that game.
I think they had a very specific audience that they were catering to in the original days of the series. And the reboot was a way to reach a whole new audience where it was, you know, the strong female lead, and it wasn't like some busty kind of sexualized character like it used to be. And
she's like athletic looking, is what she is.
Right, yeah. But I mean, just if you compared the old model with the new one, it's totally different. Yeah. And just it was very story driven and a lot darker, and like how this person came to be, and it was kind of like a Batman Begins story for her, because you know it's this traumatic event, how you build up the strength, and then the new ones due out this year later in the year, and I mean so far it looks great. I think it was featured as GI's cover story.
Yeah, so. And so we'll get to this in a little bit, but one of the games I'm really looking out for, and I think that it's what happened in this game is really going to affect kind of how that story is told in the next one. So I thought it was a good start, a good reboot. What do you have at number 6?
Yeah, number 6, Hitman Blood Money.
I picked this up
for, I think, $5 at GameStop, just totally on a whim. I was like, oh, I've always heard about the series, never gave it a shot. I had no idea what I was getting into. Best blind purchase I've ever made. So Blood Money, they're basically 10 to 12 levels or so. And each level at the start, you're briefed with a target, maybe some side targets and objectives. You're given funds, and you can earn more funds based on how you play to kind of buy your weapons or gadgets or all this stuff. And you are inserted into a semi-open world level, and you have everything at your disposal. You have disguises, you have, you know, household objects, whatever's laying around. You can, you can go through it shooting if you want, but it's realistic in the sense that you're not a one-man army.
It's more like Tom Clancy.
Yeah, opponents are going to be able to take you down. And, you know, they can see through your disguises and things like that. It was just really cool because it gave the player freedom to figure out all these different ways to execute your objectives or targets and kind of basically.
I mean, it's sandboxy.
Yeah, it didn't hold your hand. It was all up to you on what you want to do, and you had freedom.
Is it a better playthrough the second time once you kind of know how it plays out?
Yeah, well, the cool thing is that there were, I don't know, probably five different ways or more to take out your target in each level. But even then, you had all these side objectives and different basically paths to get through the whole level. And, I mean, you could spend hours on just one level if you wanted, and the replay value for that game was extremely high.
Yeah, so my number five is Fallout. Again, I was a little late to this game, and again, it was kind of like Dishonored, where I thought it was a different kind of game. This is, I mean, basically an open world that's very well done. It looks like a nuke was dropped, and I think it's maybe character-wise, it's not as good. I mean, I feel like there's unique people in it, but you don't really feel like you foster relationships with anyone. Even your dad, who's the main kind of protagonist, or the guy you're
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, which is awesome. I mean, they do the voiceover as well, and you become more attached actually to like various locations. Like there's certain locations I really liked, and they were really there's like tree people. There's Megaton where people worship like a giant nuclear bomb that you can actually set off in the game. There's just all sorts of wacky people because you got to imagine people get kind of strange after a nuke gets dropped. But I think that it's, you know, the
ghouls, is that what they were called?
The ghouls was great. I mean, it's a weird underground thing that you kind of have to seek out, but it's a hilarious. They don't want to be called zombies, and it's such a funny, like.
It's just basically radiated survivors. All the skins falling off.
No, it's just a funny. Like I said, I mean, it's very alive. You feel very, like, kind of in touch with that world. The combat's great. There's kind of this VAT system where you can choose, you know, hit them in the head or the leg.
And that got refined a little bit in Vegas, I know. Have you gotten to that yet?
So,
Fallout Vegas? Because, you know, you could customize your weapons a lot more, and it had iron sights, and the shooting was a little more shooter-esque rather than strategic.
So I haven't gotten there yet. Where I'm at right now, I own both, and I'm playing through the DLC in the second one, or in the first one, sorry. So the first one is a basic story. Like the main game is a basic story of trying to get kind of safe water. After that, you can kind of reboot it, and then you can go back in the world, and you start at level 20, I think, and you can get up to 30. I'm at the pit was cool. I thought that was really well done. The Anchorage one was kind of, I would say so-so. I mean, it's cool. It's kind of its own game, but it's not as exciting.
It's more like a quick standalone, you know, hour or two playthrough. It's not something you revisit like the Louisiana.
Yeah. So I'm on Point Lookout. So I think Pit and Point Lookout were really well done. Yeah. I think
Point Lookout was a great expansion.
Yeah. So I'm on that one right now. And then I'm trying to think what the final one is, but I still have one more after that. And then that game, I feel like, I feel like they probably made the right step with New Vegas. With first of all, cool setting. Obviously, everyone likes Vegas.
Right.
And then secondly, I think that the shooter element, where I'm at right now, I've souped up my guy enough where as long as I kill someone, I actually get all my AP back. And so I literally can use the VAT system over and over again, which for people who played will know what I'm talking about. But the actual shooting elements of it are very like elementary.
And
they definitely had
to
step up with that.
Yeah, the first one, I mean, even just the melee combat, it's very bare bones, and it was definitely more of a role-playing game than an action.
Yeah. So what was your number five?
Yeah, five, Dead Space. Played the demo for the very first one on 360 when it was released, and it scared the crap out of me. And I really like horror games, and I really like sci-fi horror.
Yeah.
And anything that combines it well, I'm all about. So I bought the first game, and it took me forever to play through it because I had to do it in chunks and sittings. Definitely some high heart rates and stress levels playing that. So for anyone who hasn't played it, the premise is that you're an engineer team going to a space station to rescue basically any survivors and figure out what happened. And, of course, there's some sort of alien invasion and conspiracy and all that and just mutated zombies. And it's nothing terribly new in the sci-fi horror genre, but the story is kind of takes second seat to just the gameplay and being, you know, this average Joe, not like some super-powered space marine that's going through and shooting everything up. It really clicked for me. It was cool because there's some kind of crafting and the combat was very tight, kind of like Resident Evil at times, where you had to make every shot count or you were just going to get shredded and have to start over.
Where does it compare to Alien? Because Alien's a new generation game that came out.
Yeah, I mean, Alien, I would say, is even harder, and it's different because there's only one alien, not a lot of enemies, and it's an AI that kind of reacts based on your actions. So like everything in Dead Space was scripted.
Yeah.
Everything in Alien you have to react to because it's different every single time. It's totally randomized. Yeah. It's also a lot harder because you're playing Ripley's daughter and she's not meant to be a soldier of any sort. So you're more so kind of relying on creativity and engineering and creating items to kind of distract the alien or hide from it rather than combat it.
So,
but with Dead Space, one quick thing is that the second one was great because it had, you know, some sort of aspects of civilization, like what happens when the alien threat hits that. And then there was even a return to the original setting, the Ishimura spaceship that the first game took place on. It was actually at the spaceport in the second game, and you had to go back on the ship, which was one of the scariest moments, I'd say, in gaming history ever.
That's cool.
Like, you know what's waiting for you there. Third game, though, was just, it was kind of... It didn't do it for me. It was kind of a disappointment. It was similar to Lost Planet, but just it was like, disappointing.
So that's a series that actually needs a reboot, kind of the next generation.
I mean, they left it open. We'll see what happens. The main character's still alive. We'll see if it's a series they continue on with.
So the DLC I forgot about was actually Mothership Zeta, where you go up in the ship.
But in Fallout. Yep.
Yeah. So my four was kind of Mass Effect, Dragon Age. We already talked about those. What was your number four?
Yeah, for Arkham City.
I did like
Arkham Asylum, but it was the best Batman game made to date at the time. And then City, it puts you in the shoes of Batman in an open world game where you're basically fighting everyone in Arkham Asylum and trying to gain back control of the city. And it's got cameo appearances from everyone in the comic books. It's got all these cool collectibles and puzzles, and the missions were great, and the combat was spot on. I think Rocksteady just knocked it out of the park. It was one of the best third-person melee combat games I think ever made, and a lot of games have been trying to kind of ape that technology and put it in theirs now.
I would say for me, like, you're a bigger Batman guy than I am, but I love Dark Knight. I love Dark Knight Rises. I think they've done a good job with the movies. I think the combat system's good. The graphics are great. And I think that they've done a good job integrating old characters and kind of maybe not giving them new life, but they've definitely kind of maybe taken some liberties with what these guys would say or how they would act. And I feel like it's like a movie. It's really well done. So I think I think it's really hard to take a game. It's hard to do with Star Wars. It's hard to do with Lord of the Rings. It's hard to take a game, a series that's really beloved and try to bring it to life as a video game. And I think they did a really good job of that.
Yeah, they did. And I'm looking forward to Arkham Knight coming out later this year, hopefully. I know it got delayed once already. So
I know my number three is in your top three. I don't know which one it is, but Red Dead Redemption was my number three. I felt like it was a game that, first of all, never ended, and I didn't want it to. I mean, I think when you play through it and you get to the end, which, by the way, I think it was years after I thought I'd beaten it, and you're like, no, there's still one stage left.
Yeah, I mean, this was, kind of a GTA-esque Western.
Yeah,
and it
Rockstar
was made, game. Yeah, Rockstar. And it was the exact same setting, but a much darker, serious tone where you weren't, I mean, you're playing kind of an outlaw that was finding himself again and trying to raise a family and all that. So he was coming back to civilization and making amends for his past.
Yeah.
But it was a game that a lot of people thought they finished, then they thought they beat it, the rest of it, and then they had to come out and say, like, no, you play it until the credits roll and the game's not done.
Which, it should be obvious, because when you get to the end, you're like, yeah, that's how it ends, of course. But I think that, there's kind of... They do a great job. Again, John Marston's a likable character. I mean, it's hard not to like him.
Right.
And I think that they do a good job with having essentially like three different episodes while, kind of string them all together. It didn't feel like it's chopped up.
Right.
But those characters... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's so much side content and exploration to do that you never feel like, you're just trying to beat the game for the sake of beating it. It's always something that feels fulfilling, so it doesn't feel like it's filler content.
Yeah.
And when they were doing the media campaign before the game release, there were even a bunch of videos that Rockstar was releasing about how much historical research they did and how accurate the game was and how they were really trying to bring the West to life at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And it was really cool, I thought, how they pulled that off.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there was some question when Gun came out if you could pull off a Western.
Right.
Clearly you can.
Yeah, and Gun was great. Terrible graphics.
Yeah.
And didn't age well, but it was a fun game.
So I don't know. I thought the storyline they nailed, the action they nailed. in general, there's a lot. I mean, there, you can't really complain about it. It's just my the two other games I have, yeah, are just that much better. I mean, it was just kind of personal preference at that point. But where's your number three?
Number three, GTA 4, and I'm throwing in 5 there too. And I mean, we already talked about them to an extent, but 4 for me was my first GTA game. I'd kind of dabbled with 3 and
that's the same with me.
Yeah, yep. And the I always forget the name of it, the Miami one,
Vice City.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you know, I kind of knew what to expect, but it was the first one that like I own, and I had all the time in the world to play it and stuff. And it was just really cool how interactive the world was, and they really make New York come to life.
It feels
and,
like New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, like, and Cat Williams is in there. They have great, like, random stuff in
and
there.
And the radio stations. I mean, you could listen to those all day long, the talk shows and stuff. And it's just really good satire and commentary. And I know it's not for everyone, but I think if you can look at it for what it is, 5
it's
especially.
It's South Park of video games.
Right. It's... Well, not anymore, because now there's South Park Stick of Truth, which is the South Park of video games. But, what it was at the time, it hit all the notes.
Exactly. So my number two is BioShock Infinite. This is another game you had to talk me into a little bit. It's not like BioShock 1 and 2, which are kind of thrillers.
A little bit horror, too.
Yeah. I mean, it does revisit kind of the underwater world, sorry. But this one takes place in the sky. It's such a, I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah,
because
floating city. Like utopia.
Yeah. And so literally you start off the coast of Maine. There's kind of this interesting dialogue by the people rowing. Cause one guy's rowing, one's not. And you take off, like you go up this lighthouse and take off into the sky. And, it just throws you into this wacky world. It does all kind of come back together. It's so well told. You really do believe in kind of the infinite universes, and that this essentially you meet a lady who, with every decision, there's kind of a butterfly effect, and you can kind of jump between which universe kind of takes place based on, what actions took place. So I think it's just, in my mind, it was one of the best told stories. It was really believable. It's so hard to articulate alternate universes, let alone have a video game based on it. And I just think, I mean, again, it could be my number one game. It was so well told. You love the stories. It really blows your mind. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it didn't make my top 10. I'd started with the first BioShock, and I loved how kind of creepy it was, and it was different. And you had these splicers who were basically like hopped up junkies with superpowers, and it was this underwater utopia that it kind of was hints of communist society or socialism, and how it was, you know, what could have happened if it was given free reign in the U.S. Some Ayn Rand what the hell is the name of the book,
Atlas Shrugged.
Atlas Shrugged, a lot of that in there. But Infinite really kind of turned the tables, and instead of trying to just live off the success of the first two, it created a whole new world and took everything in a new direction. And while it was part of the BioShock title, it was a whole new take and reboot, instead of just trying to drag everything on with the same old stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like they rebooted it well. As a standalone, it was one of my favorite games. I'm a guy who loves well-told stories. I like kind of the long form in the games, and I don't know. It's hard for me to think of. It was really close to my number one. It's a must play.
It is. Absolutely. So my number two, Red Dead Redemption, you just talked about it. I want to touch on one thing. The DLC for that game, Undead
Zombies.
Nightmare. They announced it, and everyone's like, oh, they're just going to capitalize on the zombie fad. It's not going to be good. Yeah. They're going to ruin a great game. And, I mean, Rockstar knew exactly what they were doing. They basically turned the West into a undead horde, and you had to survive and kind of free towns and a little bit of survival horror in it. And you could find the Rockstar humor was in there. You could hunt down the four horses of the apocalypse and tame them and ride them as your steeds. And then even after you finish that, Marston turns into a zombie, and you could keep playing as zombie Marston and all that, and new weapons and a whole bunch of content. And even the online, while it wasn't as good as GTA Online, there's a ton of online content for that game too. So they just really went all out in all aspects of it.
I think with number two, you have to have the good characters, you have to have the storyline, you have to kind of whatever they're going to do with the combat, they need to make sure they nail that kind of for the next generation. But I think the online portion is really interesting. I really hope they do that well, because it's such a great right. setting that there's so much you can do.
I mean, there is really some potential for them to keep expanding GTA Online, and whenever they eventually get to Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever they choose to do, or I guess it would be kind of 3 because there was Red Dead Revolver.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, why not a Red Dead Online? People would play that.
Yeah, just be a great game.
Popular as GTA.
So Deus Ex Human Revolution is my number one game. I'm probably unique in that. It's very much it hasn't aged graphically. It's a great story.
Right.
There's great choices, but it's not a dark game, but the graphics are dark. Like they're just you don't see
yeah
much.
It always takes place at night with a lot of neon signs and colors, and I think there's a director's cut. I think it updated the look a little bit,
and that's the one I played.
That's another one I turned you on to as well, right?
Yeah, so I mean, you introduced me to it. I think that it just, again, I wanted to make sure that I invested my time in it. It's not that long of a game, but it would be worthwhile. I think, from a personal standpoint, it's a great story. The choices were really, really interesting. They did the characters right. It felt like a game catered to me. And I think, you know, reading other people, what they said and stuff like that, it's like, if you kind of get that vibe, it feels very personal. And I don't know why that is, but it was such a great game. So well told. So that is my number one game. How about you?
Number one for me, it's the reason I bought a 360, is Oblivion, Elder Scrolls Oblivion. And for anyone who hasn't played it, because it's an old one, I think it was a launch title or close to it, but it's basically a medieval fantasy game, and it redefines the term open world roleplay. Like, you can do whatever you want. It never ends. You know, there's a story campaign, and you can get to the end of that in a short amount of time, but the game's really all about exploration and just building this character and doing really whatever it is you want to. And with that, I'm going to tie in Skyrim, because it was an evolution graphically, and they put in dragons, and who doesn't like to slay dragons? And it was just, I mean, I remember standing in line at midnight for the release and rushing home to get that booted up, and it was a fantastic experience. I mean, it's really cool, clever writing and great stories and side quests and just the characters. You know, there's not a whole lot of development character-wise, but you definitely meet some memorable people, and it's a fun experience. And to throw in there too, I'll say Fallout, because it's all Bethesda, and it's kind of, you know, Fallout was just Skyrim or Oblivion with guns.
It's funny going from Fallout. Sometimes I'll play Fallout and then go right to Skyrim. And I think you had to talk me into Skyrim again. I wanted to make sure I was going to invest a lot of time in it. I want to make sure it was kind of rewarding for me. Why it doesn't reach my top 10, and there's been a lot of contrast we've had, but is that it's just the storyline, I feel like, isn't along the lines of a Fallout, along the lines of Deus Ex or Bioshock or Red Dead. I think Mass Effect, whatever. I think it's a fun game. It's a fun thing to mess around with. It's really cool, though, to see kind of how Bethesda's evolved, because they kept the same kind of fundamental aspects to it. But you can tell that just graphically and in terms of even kind of characters and combat and all that stuff, Skyrim's in a different place. And so I like the trajectory that Bethesda's on between that and Dishonored and the games they've come out with. I mean, it's one of the best companies
out there. Well, I think it's also just interesting how they do their DLC, because it's entire expansions, not just, I mean, there's the infamous horse armor thing for $5 you could buy some basically just armor for your horse that was totally cosmetic, but I mean, they do a lot of fan service, and they create content from the old games, and the PC community is great because there's a lot of modding and creation of all this cool additional quests and characters and locations that aren't in the main game itself.
I would say among my favorite companies, like Rockstar, BioWare, and then Bethesda would be the top three there. I mean, it just seems like they kind of nail every game that does come out for them.
They've got a good thing going, so hopefully it stays that way. And we should be hearing some Fallout 4 info, maybe even the next Elder Scrolls game at this coming E3.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've talked a lot about top 10 games, and it's really hard to narrow it down, especially over a whole generation, because I mean, there's 10 games a year that you could put on one of these lists. But as far as some honorable mentions, what do you have?
So I think we have to talk about Halo and Call of Duty, because I think a lot of people would have them up there.
Yes.
Halo 3 multiplayer, I'd say nailed it. Like, in terms of a multiplayer game, that's something that anyone could pick up and play, and at the same time, certain people are better than others.
Right.
I mean, it was really rewarding.
And Halo was definitely in one of my honorable mentions. I loved Reach. I thought it was a great game for Bungie to go out on. But you mentioned Call of Duty. I think I love the World War II setting, especially 2. But Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare is really, I think, what kind of...
One of my favorite games.
Yep, redefined the genre and revitalized really multiplayer games in general, but the online competitive shooting scene and all that.
It was the first multiplayer game I felt like that had a one-player element to it. You were getting new guns, you're getting upgrades. They did a good job with the loading screen where you're not just sitting there looking at something done. You know, even with Grand Theft Auto to this day, like Grand Theft Auto, you spend a lot of time on a loading screen waiting for everyone to kind of get in the lobby. This, you feel like, you know, almost it went too fast. Like, you're like, hold on, I didn't mod my gun or something like that.
Right, yeah.
So they did a great job with that. The problem with that is that it went from that, which I really liked. World at War was fine. I didn't think it was phenomenal.
You know what? Going through and playing World at War, actually, it was cool for me because it tied into characters from present-day Call of Duty games because,
yeah.
You know, you'd see their origins or ancestors.
Yeah.
And I know, what's his name? Gary from plays Jim Gordon in Dark Knight series. Totally drawn a blank, but anyways, he basically plays the sniper, this Russian sniper.
Yeah,
his character
yeah.
was thrown in a prison of some sort after World War II, and then he actually resurfaces in the modern games. I think maybe Black Ops as a new character.
I'd say I like Black Ops. I like Modern Warfare. World at War was fine. I just felt like there was too many. It became too systemized. And you really had to love the multiplayer, and they're just, for me, like Grand Theft Auto multiplayer took it to another level.
Okay.
I mean, you know what I mean? And it's not online of Mortal Kombat where you're sitting in the same room, and I don't know what it was, but I might get back into it, but, I think they've done a good job. It's a high selling game. It's probably on most people's top 10 lists. You have anything more to say about that?
Yeah. Just a couple honorable mentions, Gears of War. That was pretty big.
Yeah.
I
had
the co-op scene.
I beat Gears of War 2-3 times. I beat it alone. I beat it with two other people.
See, for me, it was really just the original. I tried to beat 2. I got all the way to the end, and I started 3, and I was just like, it's the same old thing. It's not doing it for me anymore.
It's just pacing for me. I felt like 1 was a nice kind of, you know, like you felt like you were hulking through it.
Yeah.
2, I never owned 1, but I played it. 2, I felt like, again, you felt like you were kind of a force. You know, you felt like the guns really were, like, tough to handle. You were these big hulking guys and stuff. I'd say... 3 in Judgment, and I didn't even really play Judgment. I think that's what it's called, but it became just a typical shooter, and that's the unfortunate
thing. And very repetitive, like, you know, you move to one area, you clear it out, move to the next area, clear it out. It was just same thing, and kind of like Call of Duty campaigns, you know, apart from set pieces, it was all just a lot of repetitive combat.
Yeah.
Couple more XCOM. That was a big revival.
I think
you played through that, or
I beat one of them.
Yeah, more of a PC game for me. Some of the Civilization games and Rome, Total War. That was pretty cool. And again, we're getting into the PC stuff. All the PlayStation 4 games.
I'd say Uncharted, Last of Us.
Yeah,
and I know you're getting a PS4.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
pick one up and kind of play through these games as they're re-released or made over.
Yeah.
In high def, because then basically, I mean, I'd love to play Uncharted and The Last of Us and some of those
Uncharted
games
is intriguing
to me. On.
And that was Game Informer featured that, you know, 2 issues ago. I thought it was really cool. For me, I would say Jam and Blitz should be honorable mentions. Really fun sports games. And they did Madden well. NHL, I think, was really fun. Anyone could pick up and play it. And I think most of the simulations are pretty fun. NHL, I spent a lot of hours on. But Jam and Blitz are fun because they're just extreme sports. They're kind of old school games that they brought back. They did them really well. They're $10, you know, so it's
right.
easy for anyone
easy
to get
into.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about our favorites. What were some of your biggest disappointments quickly before we wrap up?
Yeah, so I would say real quick, and then Witcher 2 is another one, and Witcher 3 is coming out, so I'm looking forward to that. But in terms of disappointments, I would say Assassin's Creed Unity is kind of cheating because it's a new-gen game, but I like all the old ones.
Though.
Yeah, but it's... The unfortunate thing is I love those games for 360. I did not like them for the Xbox One generation. I actually didn't buy Unity, but from what I've read, what I've seen in gameplay, I was not impressed. I would say Nintendo in general. I love Mario Golf and Tennis. They didn't come out for Wii, not for Wii U. You know, my family has a Wii. I didn't even get the Wii U. I'm someone who fell in love with video games with Nintendo 64, and it just was not. I'm disappointed with Nintendo in general, even though they've done Smash Bros. Well and they've done Mario Kart well and stuff like that. I'd like to see that revitalized so it's as big as it was in my childhood.
Well, I think it's still as big as it was, if not bigger. The problem is that the only stuff on Nintendo is Nintendo products because their hardware is weak and they're not really But I mean, they've basically been abandoned by third-party developers, and they're not competition to an Xbox or a PlayStation.
Yeah.
It's a supplemental. It's a thing that people pick up and have both.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the biggest disappointments for me, Hitman Absolution. It was the sequel to Blood Money, and it turned into an action shooter rather than any strategic involvement or planning or anything like that, exploration. And they said that, I mean, they're already working on the new one, and they should kind of get back to the roots of the series is what they're telling people. Duke Nukem, I was expecting a funny, kind of dark humor shooter. Picked it up at midnight. Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. Yeah,
I mean, it just
8-year development hell is what it was in. Mercenaries 2, Playground of Destruction.
Yeah.
Mercenaries was one of my favorite games ever for the Xbox. And EA, of course, comes in, buys up something. Drawing a blank on who developed that. But yeah, they released Mercenaries 2, and it was just, it was kind of a hint of what was to come as far as microtransactions and pay and time walls, because you had to basically build up all these resources, and you had to have so much to utilize, like your weapons or your airdrops or vehicles or bombs or whatever. And the whole game was about trying to take over this country as mercenaries and just take out an entire corrupt third world kind of regime. And the last one I got to throw out there is Aliens Colonial Marines. I believe that was probably the biggest disappointment.
Yeah.
So many people were just upset when it released. There were attempted lawsuits. There was
so bad people are suing.
Well, I mean, it's happened with other games too, about you know, false advertising. At E3, they showed some development footage, and it was great graphics, and it looked really great. And then when the game released, it looked terrible. And it, basically, they cut down on a lot of the horsepower to make the game run better and just get it out the door faster. And I thought at that time that there's no way Sega was going to be able to save Aliens or the license, because it was just disappointment after disappointment to these Aliens fans. And then, of course, this year, at the end of 2014, Alien Isolation released on the next gen, and it's just this great, perfectly captures the original movies that everyone loved, and just, you know, it had mixed reviews because it's a very hard, trying game, but I think at the end of the day, they finally pulled it off and gave the fans something that they've been asking for.
One quick one I want to throw out there, too, is Tony Hawk. I mean, I know there was a game earlier, but the Pro Skater HD, as much as I love the original games, was not very well done. I hope they kind of bring that back and kind of reboot
it. Yeah, well, there's actually, Tony Hawk just announced a new game, so I think there's a couple tweets about it and some footage, so we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, so
To wrap up, just some stuff to keep an eye out for. You mentioned Witcher 3. Arkham Knight's going to tie up the Arkham Batman trilogy.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if they move on to a Superman game after that. They've been hinting at that, a new project.
Cool. Yeah.
There's a new Zelda coming out, so go pick up
Open World
for that.
Yep.
Tomb Raider, you mentioned. Elder Scrolls Online, maybe some announcements about Fallout 4 in the next Elder Scrolls game. And the biggest one that I'm looking forward to is Star Wars Battlefront, now that it's in the hands of DICE and everything. And that's one game, actually, that I should have thrown a little shout out to is Battlefield Bad Company. It was a great series. Many hours sunk online playing that game, and I think it's a series that they're even talking about continuing on with the Bad Company title.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I'm looking for the next Fallout, next Bioshock, Mortal Kombat X, especially seeing Marshawn Lynch and Gronk play it. I think that game's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to like new GTA content, kind of just where they go with
it. An expansion storyline would be cool, but also just the next step in online, I'm really excited to
see. Heists and stuff like that.
Exactly. Well, I mean, even location-wise, because they said, you know, we're going to have all the open worlds kind of entwined. There's going to be, theoretically, Liberty City slash New York. And
Miami, probably, too.
Oh, I'd love to see something back in Miami. But yeah, so thanks for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode. While this is standing in as our second episode, our fifth, we're going to try to tackle what kind of media involvement gaming has today, how it's seen by the media, what a gamer is, and maybe some of the recent Gamergate scandals.
Yeah, so a little Gamergate self-reflection should be a good one. This was the Video Game Podcast from 105 The Ticket in cold Omaha. Thanks for listening.